You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hello again. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. It sometimes seems as though New York is in the midst of a never-ending construction boom. But according to architecture critic Paul Goldberger, there's a new trend. Very tall, very thin, very expensive residential towers going up in Midtown Manhattan. And when we say expensive, we're talking over $90 million for an apartment. That's right, $90 million. His article, Too Rich, Too Thin, Too Tall, appears in the May issue of Vanity Fair, and I'm delighted that it brings Paul Goldberger back to the Leonard Lopate Show today. And for those listeners out here, if you have questions or comments about this development in development, please call us at 212-433-9692. You can also reach us on our show page or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Maybe you live near one of these buildings and want to talk about what that experience is like. But now let me bring on an expert in this development, Mr. Paul Goldberger. Paul, how are you?
Good. Thanks, Andy. Good to be here.
So we're seeing a lot of new buildings all over the city, and that's not anything new. That's always happening. But how is the new construction in Midtown that we're talking about different from what's going on in other parts of Manhattan or the rest of the city?
Well, it's a whole new kind of skyscraper, really. We've been used to, in the last 40, 50 years, most of our lifetimes, we've been used to the idea that skyscrapers are getting sort of bulkier and bulkier, and they're bigger and bigger office buildings, and you know, law firms and financial firms want huge floors, and that's what a tall building is. And now we've got this whole new kind of thing, which is the idea that the tallest buildings are apartment buildings, not office buildings, and that they're skinny because people don't like to be on huge floors in apartment buildings. They love the idea that they can look in all four directions and stuff like that. So in that sense, it's actually kind of a good thing. Skinny towers always look nicer on the skyline. But in a lot of other ways, it's a really troubling development because these buildings are creating enormous shadows across the park. They're changing the nature of Midtown. And they're also generally, not entirely, but mostly occupied by people who are sort of, you know, the global billionaires who have 10 residences all over the place and travel back and forth from, you know, London to New York as if the way you and I might go back and forth to Brooklyn. And so, they're not really there very much.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, more oligarchs for New York City.
More oligarchs for New York City whose main contribution to the economy is to buy the apartment when they first move in. But they're not here enough to really do very much else, and they certainly don't pay taxes.
Mm-hmm. So where can we find these oligarchs? Are they mainly living in these new towers around 57th Street and the surrounding area?
That seems to be where most of them are concentrating. Right now, the only one finished so far is on West 57th Street. There's another one going up on East 57th, 56th, 57th. There's a couple more planned for 57th, and then just around at 58th, 59th, 56th, and so forth. So that's become a whole kind of very different corridor from what it used to be. Some of these are downtown as well. And, you know, to a certain extent, luxury apartments in New York have always been driven by the fact that we're an international city, and we want to be. So I don't want to turn this into a kind of New York provincial argument. And cities around the world have to open their doors to very rich people who want to live there. That's an important part of what goes on, and we're not Dubuque and we're not Kansas City, and we don't want to be. Nevertheless, there's a certain point at which it all does seem to be tipping the balance of Midtown in favor of people who really aren't here very much and aren't invested in New York in the way that New Yorkers are.
And they're sure not shopping at bookstores because Rizzoli had to close its doors recently. So I guess they're doing something else on 57th Street.
Well, that's actually such an irony because one of the new buildings in all of its fancy marketing materials advertised, you know, how it's great to live on elegant 57th Street, and they had a big picture of Rizzoli as one of the amenities you would get if you spent $90 million to buy one of these apartments. But in fact, another developer is building another building like this on the site of Rizzoli's. So Rizzoli's is now gone.
Well, maybe one of these oligarchs can build a replica Rizzoli inside their apartment or something like that just to keep them company.
That's exactly right. For what these apartments cost,
it would be cheaper.
You could offer a Rizzoli in every one of them.
It could be like a Sub-Zero. It could just be an amenity.
It could be the expected amenity. Exactly.
Now, just to keep this in perspective, because skyscrapers are a part of the deal of living here. It's actually one of the cool things about living here. We like skyscrapers. But how tall are these towers? How do they compare to, say, the Empire State Building or One World Trade Center?
Okay. Well, the building now going up at 432 Park Avenue, which is at 56th and Park, but it kind of fronts also on 57th, is climbing rapidly. What people don't understand, I think, as they sort of walk by it on Park Avenue, is that it's going to keep going and going and going, and it's not going to stop until it's actually 150 feet taller than the Empire State Building. It will be taller than anything in New York except One World Trade Center. And it'll be the highest apartments anywhere in the Western Hemisphere, but not for very long, because another one of these buildings on West 57th is going up that is going to be taller. It's just farther back on the calendar. That's all. So
I mean,
this is going to be the tallest apartment building in the world for maybe 6 to 12 months.
If you can get in there.
Right.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and we're here at WNYC and WNYC.org, and I'm talking to architecture critic Paul Goldberger about this new phenomenon of super tall, super thin, super expensive residential towers in Midtown. Now, how many – you named a number of these buildings, but I didn't do a mental tally. How many of these buildings are going up right now?
In Midtown, when we were doing the Vanity Fair piece, I think we calculated 8.
Okay. So
7 or 8, all within, you know, a couple blocks of 57th Street.
Now, are they all the work of a single developer, or is there some kind of a competition, sort of brackets going on among developers to see who can build the tallest, fanciest, most expensive building?
It's a competition among several developers. One company, Extel, has kind of had the lead. They did the first one at 157 West 57th. That's the only one now finished. They're also doing one that will be the very tallest farther west on 57th Street. But several other developers have gotten into the game, too, because they see that this is a whole new market, unlike anything they've ever seen before. And, you know, I have to admit to being in many ways kind of torn about it, because in one sense, you know, very tall buildings are the DNA of New York, and that's what we're about, and we don't want to make it otherwise. And I also think thin buildings are more elegant than fat, tall buildings. So in that sense, it's also good. But it just is beginning to really change the nature of Midtown Manhattan in a really, really significant way.
Now, 157 West 57th, I remember because during Hurricane Sandy, a crane fell over and was dangling kind of ominously over the street for several days. And we're sort of watching that on New York One.
Yes.
And nearby buildings had to be evacuated. How did that drama turn out?
That drama turned out in the end to be, you know, not a big deal long term. I mean, there was a crane problem. They did the safe thing, which is evacuate everybody. It got fixed, and life went on, and the building went on. You know, the crane was a problem only for a matter of days or weeks. The building itself is there forever, though.
Right. So you're not focusing so much on the safety issue of the actual construction of these buildings.
No, I think that was something that was a rare and unfortunate accident that happily was handled very well. And ultimately, there was a lot of inconvenience as a result of it, but nothing worse than that. But the construction process itself, I think, is generally pretty safe. But the implications of the buildings are really about something else. And the crane got fixed very quickly. The shadows, however, will be there forever.
Seemed like for a while when I was looking in the real estate pages of the New York Times, every other new development was an Extel building. They were all over the place, and I guess they're still going up. How do you feel about the architectural quality of these new buildings that Extel seems to be favoring?
I'm not thrilled with a lot of the Extel buildings, I have to say. I think
sort of the, generic, do you think?
Well, they're generic, leaning toward glitz. Mm-hmm. And I think 157 West 57th is especially just unattractive on the outside. It kind of looks to me like a much cheaper building than it really is. When you get inside, the quality of the interiors is actually pretty good, to give them their due. They're high ceilings, they're beautiful kitchens, beautiful bathrooms, amazing views, of course, which is the main thing you're paying for. But the outside looks kind of a little bit like a kind of Las Vegas hotel.
Well, I guess they know their market. I guess that's what oligarchs are looking for.
Maybe it is, although it'll be interesting to see how they do comparatively, because the building at 57th and Park, 432 Park, is completely different in that they're actually, it's very austere, sort of minimalist modern on the outside. And they are hoping that they can convince oligarchs that, you know, real elegance, real strength and money is restrained, not flashy and showy. We'll see. I mean, they make a really interesting kind of comparison, because one of them is all about understatement and the other is all about overstatement.
Interesting. You know, we referred earlier to this $90 million apartment. What building is that located in?
The $90 million apartment is in 157 West 57.
What do you get? What do you get for $90 million?
Well, you get something pretty cool. I mean, again, to be fair, I mean, you get either five or six bedrooms, a spectacular view in many directions. You look north to the park and south to One World Trade Center, and you're so high, you see unobstructed in all directions. There's a huge high, what they call, I think, a winter garden, sort of like a enormous glass-enclosed greenhouse-type space where you're looking up to the sky as well as out, and, you know, incredibly elegant fixtures, finishes, bathrooms, kitchens, and so forth. So there's no question it's pretty spectacular. I mean, it's for $90 million, you are not getting, a studio on Second Avenue with 8-foot ceilings, definitely. I mean, it's a serious, pretty nice place.
It's also kind of good to be so high up for when the revolution comes. I mean, I think that's probably a better place to be.
I suppose, unless the revolution cuts off the elevators and sidewalk.
Then you've got trouble.
You've got trouble, you know, because I don't think these buildings have helicopter pads or whatever.
Not yet.
But not yet.
Now, let me ask you.
Sure.
These buildings are very thin and tall. Why are developers deciding to build the towers that way? Are they being built on skinny lots that weren't considered suitable for building in previous eras, or what's going on with that?
Well, the thinness is due to a number of reasons. Some of it is that some of these lots were not considered buildable earlier. Another is because apartments have a different footprint than offices, they can be built on much thinner sites. Engineering is now advanced enough to allow us to go very tall and very thin and make a building stable from wind. Wind is one of the biggest issues in skyscraper design. And,
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, to keep a very, very tall building from swaying in a significant way, you have to really, you know how to engineer it very well. The building at 56 and Park, 432 Park, is actually going to have open floors that the wind will kind of go through, sort of like the way a sailboat has a slit in a sail, so
sure,
the wind can go through it. And this has actually been designed with a similar kind of technique. And the other reason that apartment buildings can be relatively thin is they don't require a lot of elevators. Office buildings, you know, have thousands of people going in and out and up and down all the time, so you need a huge volume of elevators. Apartment buildings, you don't have so many people, especially if they're not living there very much. You really
right.
don't have a lot of people. And so these enormous buildings get by with, you know, a handful of elevators. So that allows much more efficient use of space as well.
And I assume for a lot of these residents, they're getting out on their floor, and they're the only apartment on the floor, right? I mean, you're not sharing a landing with five other people.
Absolutely not with five other people. I think most of these buildings, it's the most with one other person.
Right.
And one of the buildings, I believe, the elevators are kind of split so that the floors that are divided, you actually feel like you have a private elevator because, say, you know, one elevator goes to the north apartment, the other elevator goes to the south apartment or what have you. So you have the illusion you have a whole floor because you have a private elevator landing.
So minimizing human contact is another amenity of these awesome buildings.
I guess that's one way to look at it. I don't think the developers would quite advertise it that way.
No, they're advertising the proximity to Rizzoli, of course.
Right, exactly.
I'm speaking with Vanity Fair contributing editor Paul Goldberger about very tall, very thin, and very expensive apartment buildings that are being built in Midtown Manhattan. His article, Too Rich Too, is in the May issue of the magazine. We have a link to it on our show page. We'll have more after a break. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate at WNYC and WNYC.org. And maybe you've been in Midtown Manhattan recently and noticed some very, very tall, very thin, very expensive buildings going up. Well, architecture critic Paul Goldberger has written a very interesting article about this in the current issue, the May issue of Vanity Fair. It's called, I actually misnamed your article earlier. It's called Too Rich, Too Thin, Too Tall. And so you're asking those questions in this piece. Now,
Right. Let
me ask you about...
The title has a question mark at the end of it.
Yes, right. And you notice that my voice went up to dramatize
right.
that.
Very deftly, yes.
I know what I'm doing here. Now, let's talk again. Put your architecture critic hat on for a moment.
Yep.
Let's talk about the design of these buildings. Do they have any big-name so-called starchitects attached to them, like Frank Gehry or Richard Meyer?
They do. Those two architects have not so far done this kind of building, although Frank Gehry did do a building downtown, 8 Spruce Street, that until now has been the tallest apartment building in New York. It's in Lower Manhattan near City Hall, and it's a rental building, much smaller apartment, so it doesn't really fall into this category, even though it right now is the tallest building, but it's going to be surpassed very soon. Actually, it's already been surpassed by 157. 157 West 57th was designed by Christian de Portzamparc, who's a French architect who's won the Pritzker Prize. The 432 Park building is Raphael Vignoli. Robert Stern has done a couple of them in New York. The firm called Adrian Smith and Gordon Gill from Chicago is doing another. They're the people who did the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, the tallest building in the world. So they have some experience in super, super tall. And so, yes, in fact, I think part of the selling point today with condos of all sizes, really, is a superstar architect. It's sort of like you... I think if a woman is going to spend $4,000 on a dress, she wants a recognizable name on the label. And I think if people are going to spend $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 a square foot for an apartment, they want the same thing. They want a big-name architect.
Mm-hmm. We were sort of trashing or sniffing at some of the glitzy Las Vegas Extel buildings before, but... Are there any of these designs of any of these buildings that you actually really like, you think are spectacular?
I think that 432 Park, to my surprise, is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of almost didn't want to like it, but I still have a lot of issues with all the social implications of building... you know, oligarch buildings, as you call them, and making them so tall and making Midtown a kind of colony of these buildings and these people. Nevertheless, I think it's actually kind of strangely beautiful. It reminds me of one of those Saul LeWitt minimalist sculptures from the 1980s where he made these sort of grid towers as sculptures. It looks like just a very simple, elegant concrete grid. All the windows are exactly 10 feet square. None of them bigger, none of them smaller, and the grid just begins at the bottom and goes all the way up for 96 floors without changing at all. And there's something just sort of very, I don't know, I just find it very compelling and elegant. It surprised me because, as I said, I really didn't expect to like any of these buildings.
Sure. How do these towers fit in with the existing architecture of the neighborhood? Because if they're being built on these tiny little lots, they're being wedged in between other buildings. Are they working in the neighborhoods architecturally, or does no one seem to care?
You know, something very tall never fits very gracefully next to things that are very short. I think in New York we've lived with that for a long time, and I don't know that that in itself is the biggest issue. You know, and increasingly, of course, as these buildings themselves become the context, fitting in maybe means making another one of them. So, and we've been used to a mix of tall and short and high and low in Midtown forever, and I don't think that in itself is necessarily the problem. And some of them are making some pretty good efforts to fit in. You know, even the building that I have said I don't like that much, the sort of glitzy one at 157 West 57th, if you walk by it on the street, you know, it sort of makes an even line with the other buildings on 57th Street. It doesn't loom over you in a terrible way. It's perfectly pleasant to walk past at ground level. So in that sense, you could say, yeah, maybe they kind of do fit in.
Now, which one of these buildings is the one that's going up next to and is being sort of cantilevered over the top of the Art Students League on 57th Street?
That one is the one that will be at 225 West 57th Street. That's the one they're just getting started on. They're just beginning to excavate for it, so nothing's actually up yet. That's the one that's going to be the very tallest of all, by those Chicago architects, Adrian Smith and Gordon Gill.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Art Students League is a landmarked building. Did Landmarks Preservation Commission, do they have any say about this project?
Yeah, they do. They do. Because the Art Students League, in fact, is a great landmark. It was designed by Henry Hardenberg, who designed the Dakota and the Plaza Hotel. They did have say over it, but they said it was okay. They decided it would not have a negative impact on the landmark. Therefore, they were not going to stand in the way of it.
Now, you said that a lot of the people who are in these buildings, especially the foreigners who are buying these apartments, aren't there that much. Are they able to do that because they're condos and not co-ops? Is that how they get around that?
Yes. Condos have very different regulations.
Mm-hmm.
In a condo, basically, it's just a commodity transaction, and you can trade and buy and sell them and rent them and so forth. They really are tradable commodities, whereas a co-op, you're buying shares of stock in a corporation that jointly owns the whole building, and neighbors have the right to sort of review every transaction and decide whether a person is suitable or not, and they generally will not sell to corporations, only to individuals and so forth. It's a big hassle to deal with a New York co-op, maybe too much of a hassle. That's why condos have been such a boom now, because they're a much easier sort of thing to deal with. And that's why they're so perfect for people who are living primarily somewhere else. The best description of some of these buildings that I've ever heard, I have to say I wish it were my line, but I can't claim I thought of it, was Jonathan Miller, a real estate appraiser, who referred to them as safe deposit boxes in the sky.
Well, they are, because
people can just stash their cash.
Right. It's just money.
Yep.
Okay. Now, here's an opposing view, or at least a different view. A listener wrote on our show page saying, quote, "Building densely in Manhattan is the most environmentally conscientious type of development, since Manhattan has the best public transportation in the country." How do you feel about that?
Well, they're right. That the point is right. That doesn't mean, therefore, anything tall we build is therefore the right thing to do, however. I mean, that person's basic point is absolutely right. Manhattan is much greener than most places because people walk or take public transportation, and we're not dependent on automobiles. And however much energy, say, a 50-story building uses up, it generally uses a lot less than that same amount of space spread out over acres and acres in the suburbs with everybody driving to and from it. So in that sense, the person is right, but I don't know that it necessarily follows that, therefore, anything we build that's tall is environmentally the right thing to do.
Now, Alex from Greenpoint writes in that there are comparatively tall towers going up in neighborhoods like his, Greenpoint, where the average building height is only about 4 or 5 stories. And these new buildings are going to ruin a lot of views, even if they're not 90 stories tall, like the ones in Midtown. And he writes, how is that allowed? Well, I don't know if you can answer how is that allowed, but let's take on this issue of the views. How do these buildings affect the views of the neighbors?
Well, he's right that, in fact, if you build a 20- or 30-story building in Greenpoint, it's going to have as dramatic an effect on that neighborhood as a 90-story building
sure.
will in Manhattan. So he's completely right about that. However, you know, if you're talking about views, those buildings are adding views for more people than they're taking them away from.
Uh-huh.
In other words, you know, they're selling views. So you could say that a building may be blocking the views of 50 or 100 people near it, but it's giving new and better views to 400 people who are moving into it. So I don't know that the view argument is the best one to make if you're opposed to those buildings. Views in New York have never been guaranteed forever unless you live right on Central Park or right on Riverside Park or right on Brooklyn Heights Promenade or one of those other places that is protected. So otherwise, it's always been kind of up for grabs, and that's, I think, part of the gamble you make by choosing to live in the city. Unless you're in a historic district or whatever. Some of those areas were rezoned under the Bloomberg administration in the last 10 years to permit these buildings. I mean, the city went through a process and public hearings and, you know, planning evaluations and so forth and made a conscious decision to allow that. That doesn't mean everyone was in favor of it, and I'm sure that a lot of people opposed it, but the administration ultimately made that decision. So we're not seeing anything built that's not legal.
I see. But they are casting a lot of shadows in Central Park.
They're casting a lot of shadows, and they are changing the nature of a lot of these neighborhoods. I mean, that's, I think, the key thing. In some ways, you know, a neighborhood like Greenpoint, it's especially troubling because there was a beautiful scale to it and a kind of comfortable pedestrian quality. And some of that is being lost when you build very, very tall things on the waterfront. Long Island City, very nearby, which was more industrial and now has its huge amount of waterfront development, there I think it was taking less away, and so there's more of a net gain with a lot of what's happened there. We've really kind of built a whole new city in that neighborhood.
I've been speaking with Vanity Fair contributing editor Paul Goldberger about very tall, very thin, and very expensive apartment buildings that are being built in Midtown Manhattan. His article, Too Rich, Too Thin, Too Tall, is in the May issue of the magazine. We have a link to it on our show page. And Paul, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Andy. This has been great. It's been fun.